What's up, Internet? Welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar, this week joined by Senior Writer Sam Rutherford. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good. And also Podcast Producer Ben Ellman is here. Hey, Ben.
Hello.
Hello. We've got a new phone, which is nice. And also we've got the entire economic landscape on fire. So we'll talk a bit about all of those things. Sam has the Pixel 9a. His review of that just went up. And also we've all been just sitting back and waiting to see what the outcome is after the Trump administration announced the tariffs that they wanted to do last week. Kind of blew everything up right after the switch was announced. Now there's a 90-day pause, except bigger tariffs against China. So that actually applies to everything. We are not an economics podcast, but the prices affect everything we talk about. So sit tight, folks. We'll kind of break it all down for you. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. You can join us Thursday mornings around 11 a.m. Eastern at our YouTube channel where we do a live stream. Sometimes we show off gadgets. We often do Q&A. This week, Sam's going to have the Pixel 9a. So if you want to see that thing in action, go check out our YouTube channel. And let's get right to it, Sam. The Pixel 9a, when it was announced, you called it the new mid-range smartphone king. Is that the case?
Yeah, my feelings haven't changed too much since, I first, only got a really quick demo of it. But, I mean, here's the breakdown. It's got the same chip as the basic Pixel 9, the regular Pixel 9, but it starts at $500, which is $300 less than the cheapest, regular Pixel 9. Still has very nice screen, 120 hertz, same brightness as the regular Pixel 9, and, they made some small tweaks. It has a plastic back instead of glass, and the charging is a little bit slower. But really, so many times people ask me, it's like, hey, what should I get? And a lot of times they're asking for, for an iOS recommendation.
Right, right.
Whatever. But, if they're asking me, hey, what's a really just good, simple Android phone, has good battery life, nice screen, takes good pictures? This is your answer. It's the Pixel 9a. And for the price, it's just really, really hard to beat.
I do wonder if this is the timing of this phone arriving now. It could be for a lot of people the go-to tariff phone if you want a nicer experience. There are cheaper Android phones out there, but how is the camera? How does this compare to other phones you've seen, both cheaper and the bigger 9a?
Google said that this is going to be the best camera phone under $500, and I actually think they're kind of selling themselves a little short. I tested this thing head-to-head against the Galaxy S25 Ultra. And it definitely kept up. Obviously, it doesn't have a dedicated telephoto lens. So, you don't have quite that kind of same range for shooting further stuff away. But, in terms of pure image quality, obviously, people know that Google's night sight low light mode is super good. And, even on, what is supposed to be a more affordable entry mid-range phone, it's got better white balance in low light. It's just generally sharper, more detailed in low light. And so, it also has a new macro focus mode, which is, I admit, a little bit finicky because, you have to kind of play around to really hit that sweet spot for its focus. But it's, I'm not going to complain about another tool in the photography kit. And there's also, your basic ultra wide angle lens, which obviously wasn't quite as good as the S25 used, but it's there, and it's totally way more than serviceable.
Nice, nice. I mean, it does seem like this is everything we want, right? We were talking about, we really wish Apple had priced that iPhone 16e at $500 or something cheaper. To get a phone, for my parents are not Android people, but my mom needed a new phone. I had to get her a used, I think it was a 14 Pro, not 14 Plus or 13 Plus, but a fairly recent iPhone. It was 400-ish. And that's a good phone, but it's not a brand new phone with a new processor, new cameras and everything. And that's just the sort of thing you could do in Android world. So I don't want to bring my folks over to Android because I don't want to support them on Android. But if you are an Android, first person, the market is just wide open to you to have great phones like this that don't cost too much.
And it's one of those things where it's this phone isn't super flashy. It doesn't really look all that different from the regular Pixel 9. The camera back is a little bit different. It's almost flush, which is nice, but no one's going to buy it for the camera module, right? But it's there's this thing. It's everyone always wants the latest, greatest, super flashiest, super premium device. But for, day-to-day stuff, this is just a really good basic smartphone. It does all the things you needed to do. And a little bit more. And it has, you know, a lot of Google's like really nice, you know, software. Some of it is obviously AI powered, but you know, you still get the Pixel Recorder app, you know, stuff like Call Assist, you know, car crash detection, you know, all very nice features. And you know, Google's going to support this thing just like the flagship devices, and you're going to get feature drops and stuff like that. I do want to call out that there is one Google app that I really wish was on the phone, but for some reason I asked Google and they just said, hey, we had to make compromises, it's not available. And that's the Pixel Screenshots app, which I have found to be just super useful, you know, since it came out last year, just because I take screenshots all the time. And if, you know, I have 100, 200 screenshots, I don't want to go searching through them manually, just like having to like scroll through a billion different photos. And I can just ask, you know, the AI to like, hey, do some basic image recognition, you know, see what's in the content of the photos and help me find stuff a little bit faster. Unfortunately, that's not available on the Pixel 9a, but pretty much everything, every other kind of Google-specific Pixel app is, that includes like Gemini Live with video and the Pixel Studio kind of AI image generation app. So it's, you know, really well-rounded. And once again, got to fall back on that price. You get 8 gigs of RAM, 128 base storage, but there's a 256 gig option. It's, you know, a really good price, really good value, not super flashy, but I'm okay with that.
I almost wonder if we're entering, like, we are all tightening our belts a little for, like, an impending recession. I think a lot of people are worried about what this could mean. the sort of, like, what people used to do 100 years ago when they were really trying to, like, save money and survive, is that, are we going to have, like, a tech equivalent now? Or is everybody going to be a little more like, I'm going to use this smartphone for a lot longer? You know, I'm going to get this thing repaired rather than be willy-nilly. Is our sort of, like, freewheeling the way we would just like a lot of people would just upgrade stuff every year. I think some upgrades also feel just kind of frivolous. Is a lot of that going to go away and people are going to be like, I need more practical devices, more practical gadgets? I was thinking of like things I would need, you know, as prices will skyrocket thanks to the wonderful new tariff initiatives. And I was like, I don't actually need a new lawnmower. I guess I wanted one. I wanted lawnmower. But I have a Greenworks that basically I inherited from family. It's still pretty good, and all I need to do is change the blade. So I'm going to figure out how to replace, you know, the blade for that lawnmower rather than buy a whole new thing. My dreams of building a NAS, I talked about last week, I think. I'm going to put a hold on that because I have other ways to, like, store data and do it without outlaying a whole ton of cash. And I do wonder if people are going to think about that. Is that something you're thinking about, Sam?
Yeah, this is one of those things where it's like, you know, how should we update our best tablets guide? And I feel like tablets are one of those devices where, like, if you already have a tablet and it works and it's not broken, that's probably one of those, like, kind of purchases that, like, is not a core thing that you use every day. And it'd be nice to have a new tablet. But, you know, if it's going to cost 10, 20, maybe 30% more, do you really need it? And so it's like, it kind of feels like the austerity measures for, like, the tech buying landscape is definitely here. And it's like, you know, we talked about this, like, you know, months ago. It's like, I'm in the, like, market for a, you know, new desktop setup, all new components, and, like, that's definitely on hold. Like, I gotta see how things shake out before I commit, you know, $2,000 to, like, a bunch of new PC components.
Yeah, it's kind of rough. Speaking of tablets, right, like, I have, and we talk about this, like, iPads, a lot of devices do last a long time. I have an iPad, I think it's 6th gen, that I bought in, like, 2018 when my daughter was born. So that was 6 years ago. And even at that point, it was still a little older. So I bought it, like, for $200, basically. But still kicking. It's still, like, the thing we use to play videos for my son in the car. It's beaten up. The screen is cracked, but who cares? It can still watch Peppa Pig, and it still works. It still gets updated.
So. I was at a briefing yesterday. On the way back, I was walking past an Apple store. And I walked in, and I'm like, man, I do really like the iPad mini, and it's not something that I need, but, like, you know, it would be really nice to just have on the coffee table next to the couch or whatever.
Right, right.
And I was like, it's just a really nice device. And, you know, if I, you know, wanted to use it for, like, you know, the kids while we're traveling, it seems like a really good fit for that. But it's like, I can't really justify it. And it's like, It's like, in this economy, what are we doing? Are we buying $500 tablets? It's like, it didn't make sense. And I was like, maybe we'll wait on that one.
Paying more to buy a smaller tablet, that's like peak, you know, that's peak capitalism, I guess. Like, that's we are it's kind of funny. Like, people pay more to get the Foldy phone. You're a Foldy phone person now, Sam. I know, like, that's, and that's experience you want to pay more for. But I do wonder, like, those premium ideas, are we going to see fewer of those things as people kind of balk at prices? Like, look at what happened with the Switch 2. Everyone's like, oh my God, I can't believe that's $450. And I think we all argued the tech in there is actually pretty, that's pretty good for what you're getting. Unfortunately, everything is more expensive. But now, we'll talk about this, Nintendo has delayed Switch 2 pre-orders, potentially could even raise the price in the US. A Switch 2 at $500 base. Like, are people going to freak out even more about this? It's just a weird time we're in right now. So
one thing, an iPad mini is just a normal sized iPad for a child.
That's true.
So, like, you got to think about proportionality.
But you're paying, Ben, you're paying more, though. Like, you pay more for the iPad mini because it's an iPad Air. Like, it has iPad Air hardware. So a normal size iPad for a kid actually is the cheaper one. The one for the iPad for the kid is the cheapest one, which is the base.
That iPad is too big for children's proportions, though.
Which kids? Like, anybody, if a kid is...
I'm thinking about Sam's kids, who are roughly, like, your oldest one is a toddler right now,
yeah,
right?
He's like 3.5.
Yeah, I mean, so that is a... The iPad mini is a proportional iPad for a 3-year-old.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
It's great, but the base iPads, they're fine. They're perfectly fine, because what you want to do is actually put a big chunky case on that sucker so the kids can hold it and grab it and throw it around and fine. So an iPad mini would be better, but actually the iPad is 10 inches, right? That's a 10-inch screen.
It is. I mean, the real answer is that you want to get these kids like a Leapfrog pad that will teach them how to read and nothing else. Like,
I wish...
Mm-hmm. I think we are definitely reaching the point of the backlash against iPad kids because, I mean, wow, do we have iPad kids in college now? I have heard stories of kids trying to get through college classes with an iPad and nothing but an iPad with, like, you know, one of those kind of typing pads. I don't get it.
Lot of classes, that's all. Like, if you're doing like creative writing,
don't defend the iPad kids. That's not what I'm trying to do here.
Tools. Different tools. Well, it's crazy.
Like, my kid's not there yet, but you know, my school, I think they assign first graders just a straight up laptop, and it's like, okay, I get it, but that feels a little bit too early to me. I don't know. I was talking to some other parents. I'm like, I would kind of like to just keep computers out of the classroom until like fifth grade or something like that.
It depends. That, like, would my daughter's sense. In kindergarten, and they do the Chromebooks thing, and a lot of kids, kindergartens, first graders, do it. They don't do it for everything. They do it for some things, because the reality of the situation is these kids are going to grow up in a world where they need to understand how these things work and do some of this work. It doesn't replace everything. It's like 10% of what they do, maybe, if that. But it's a whole thing. But anyway, we're talking about the Pixel 9.
Yeah, we're talking about the Pixel 9. Yeah. So let's come back to the design of the phone. We got a good comment from Mears Nook in the chat that said, I think the transition from plastic to glass was pointless. I remember the good old days of not being afraid to drop my phone.
Yeah.
Tell us more about that, Sam.
So if you remember, way back in the day, you know, phones went from plastic and then they went all metal. In back, remember? And the HTC
Metal in back is also good.
Was one of the handsets, and metal was great, except metal is not good for wireless charging. Yes. And so then they went back to plastic, and then people complained, plastic doesn't feel fancy enough. And then we went through this whole cycle of, we want the phones to look like luxury, you know, watches and jewelry and stuff like that. And that's when glass got added in. And there is, you know, some advantages to glass. Obviously, you know, it can do wireless charging just like plastic. It does feel a little bit nicer, but if, you know, most people throw their phone in a case, it doesn't really matter. And then there is, you know, the definite, like, you know, recyclability, you know, ecological aspect. It would probably be better to just use glass, which is made from sand. And so that's, you know, a little bit, you know, at least more sustainable feeling versus plastic. But from a price perspective, I have no complaints about it. You know, I'm kind of holding it up right here, and it's, you know, it's a very nice matte texture. And honestly, I think a lot of people, if they held it up and they just kind of, you know, touched it a little bit, they probably might not notice. And even the weight difference is very similar. It's like less than half an ounce difference in terms of overall weight. This one's a tiny bit lighter, but not by much.
I do remember when we started transitioning to glass backs on phones, it did seem like the dumbest idea. And that was, which iPhone was it? Was it the iPhone 4? The iPhone 4 did that. And then the Google Nexus 4 was like one of the big Android phones that did that. But I do miss the metal-backed.
That's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
I miss the metal-backed phones, the HTC One. That sucker was so beautiful.
I still have one.
It's beautiful. I have it in a drawer here somewhere. But then, like, Apple kind of basically took that design, right, and kind of ran with it and did their own thing with it. So that was funny. Also, metal backs are bad for reception, too. So I think as we approached 5G radios and you needed bigger antennas, metal is bad. Metal blocks
things. One thing that, will probably piss off a lot of people is, like, the transition to glass backs was also when we started getting non-replaceable batteries. Because, you know, if you remember back on, I think it was up to the Galaxy S5, they had a plastic back. You could take out the battery super easily. And then, you know, for the Galaxy S7, we went to glass, and that was sort of not a thing. And that was part of because people kept talking about, I want thinner and thinner phones, and I want better water resistance, stuff like that. And when you seal in the battery and you seal in the phone, you're eliminating some of those air gaps inside, and you're also making a little bit more water resistant. That said, the S5 did have an IP rating, so it's not like you can't do it with a, you know, removable plastic back. But it's really interesting kind of trace, like, you know, what people were complaining about or what people were like wanted to see more on phones and how the manufacturers kind of responded to that feedback.
I do wonder, like, so Pixel 9a, a great $500 phone we were talking about, was it the OnePlus, one of the new OnePluses? It's also like, or no, the Nothing phone that's like newer and even cheaper, right? $450.
Yeah, yeah. Eagle really liked both the three, Nothing Phone 3 and the 3A. It just, at least in the US, because those phones are available only through Nothing's beta program, it's hard to recommend. If you were, you know, enthusiasts, which, you know, a lot of people listening probably are, it's, you know, a little bit more approachable because, hey, you're kind of already in the space, you know how it works. But, you know, I can't recommend it to, you know, a random friend or, you know, a parent who's like, you know, not super tech savvy.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I feel like $500 for a lot of people, that's going to be a new baseline price from what they want to get for smartphones. I wonder what this means for, like, the stuff they're projecting, like the whatever the next iPhone, the thin one, whatever they end up calling that, the iPhone 17 Air or whatever, like stuff like that, where it's like you made this thing a couple millimeters thinner, right? Like, is it really going to change our lives? Are people really going to spend more for that, especially as they're sort of like trying to hold on to their money more, as they're worried about their jobs, as they're worried about the price of groceries and everything. That's sort of like,
yeah, I mean, it is not just the devices that are going up in price. Everything is getting increased.
So surviving itself is harder. Spending a little extra, a couple hundred more for a slightly thinner iPhone that will likely be missing some features too, because it won't have the additional cameras that are in the Pro models and maybe less battery life than the base iPhone. That's a thing, like, I don't think a lot of people are going to deal with. So I feel like the Pixel 9a is the phone of the era at this point, or at least other phones like this that are pretty capable at $500. Do you think, like, is there a chance Apple would ever lower the price of the 16e, like, in 6 months or so?
No.
I mean, maybe in a year or two. It's one of those things where Apple just, you know, because they have such a commanding, like, market, you know, force, they don't really lower prices until way later. It's kind of like Nintendo. Nintendo, like, never lowered the price of the, you know, the base Switch. They never lowered the price of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe and stuff like that.
That's true. Also, no prices will be getting lower, right? The idea of, like, a company just, like, lowering prices in general, like, that is kind of a thing of the past. But I'm almost wondering a scenario.
Well, I mean, we'll also get into this probably later on, not, like, this week or in the next month or so. But let's say these tariffs continue on and there is no, like, resolution between the Trump administration and China. That raises the price for new items. It also raises the prices for everything on the secondary market. So think about what it was like trying to get a used car in, like, 2020, 2021. Like, the used car market was crazy then.
I was there. It was bad. Yeah.
The same thing is going to happen. You are going to try to get, you know, an old iPad Pro because it was just a couple of weeks ago and we were saying, like, maybe all you need is it, like, the last gen model iPad Pro or last gen model like iPhone, but that's going to be more expensive too now because prices for everything went up. That's how it is.
That will be a little tougher to tell because used cars are a thing where it's like that's a market that already exists and people are well aware of it. I don't think people are really aware that you could probably save some money if you go buy a slightly used or refurbished iPhone or iPad or whatever. And that maybe
they'll get aware really fast.
they'll certainly get aware. So anyway, that's a whole thing. So you like the Pixel 9a, Sam. That's your ultimate takeaway here. Any like downsides to it? Is there something you wish it had that the Pixel 9 proper has?
Yeah, I mean,
you mentioned the screenshots app. Yeah.
Yeah. The screenshots app, I think charging would be faster. I got to say the wireless charging speeds caps out at 7.5 watts, which is like pretty much as slow as it can possibly be on a phone. Yeah. And so for kind of an example, I put the phone on a charger at 25% and after 10 minutes, you got 5% extra battery on a wireless charger. So it is definitely, you know, yes, it has wireless charging, but it's more of a convenience thing and definitely not something you want to do if you like, hey, I need some extra battery because I'm about to run out the door. Plug it in, use a wire. And yeah, I think for me, I would love to see telephoto lenses on a $500 device. I've seen it before. I know it's possible. Just because I personally think that telephoto lenses are a lot more usable on a day-to-day basis than ultra-wides. But, you know, I know that is more of a subjective.
It's so much more useful, like taking pictures of your kids or doing things like.
Or like you're at a concert, like it's a lot easier to zoom in than just walk up, you know, when you have an assigned seat at a sporting event or whatever.
Exactly. So much more useful. Let's open up the do we have any questions from the chat about the Pixel 9a? I would love to have some time to answer those.
So we've got another question from Mears Nook that says, I wonder if the 9A form, no camera bumps, will be adopted into any of the other Pixels, or will it be only for the A series? I'd love a Pro version with no camera bump and a large battery.
Yeah. So it's interesting because one of the things I asked Google about, like, hey, what you know, the camera bar visor has been kind of a signature Pixel design thing for a long time. And they said that, like, because of some of the, like, the internal design changes, partly to the motherboard and partly to, like, some of the battery stuff that's going on, they kind of just found extra room inside the phone, and that kind of allowed them to make the back, like, almost completely flush. And so I think this was actually one of those cases where, like, you know, Google saw a little bit of room to pivot, and so they just did it, and they didn't think too much about it. So I can't say that, like, this is going to become a design trend. I like what they did with the Pixel 9a in terms of like the, you know, kind of flatness of the camera module, but it's really hard to say if it's going to be like an ongoing thing.
Does anybody care? Like other than the people who are like, oh, kind of irked by the camera bump. Is that a thing normal people care about? I guess the main benefit would be you could fit in a bigger battery, and that is nice.
Yeah. I honestly don't know. I feel like it's not, because so many times when you put a case on it, the case kind of levels out the back of the phone anyways. And so to me, this matters to, like, you know, design connoisseurs and just nut jobs like me who just don't put cases on any of their devices.
This has a fast refresh rate screen, right?
Yes, up to 120 hertz.
That's all we want. Fast refresh rate screens on everything. The Switch 2 is going to have it. This has it. The iPhone 16e doesn't have it. God damn it. Or the iPhone 16.
Mears Nook is also like, why the increase in size? There's no increase in size. Here, let me, if you are, hopefully you're watching, I assume because you're on YouTube. That you are. Here's the basic Pixel 9, and here is the Pixel 9a, exactly the same size.
Can you show the backs though? See, big, okay, so that camera bump gets stuck on your pants. It gets stuck on the pocket as you're trying to slide it into your pants.
Good side angle comparison.
Like, that would be my complaint about this camera bump.
Does that happen to you? Like, Ben, you have a phone with a camera bump now, right? So
no.
Is it a thing? I don't know. I think at least for jeans and men's pants, like, it's not a huge deal. My main worry is, like, when you drop the phone, that it's kind of an exposed thing for the lens. Like, it makes the lens a bigger target, but I've never smashed a lens.
So that's actually one thing that people really, like, nitty-gritty detail. One of the things phone designers have told me in the past is that they like camera bumps because it prevents people from smudging their lens quite as much, because there's a little like protrusion to kind of catch your finger on. And so I haven't really noticed that I have to, like, you know, wipe this phone down more than others. But that was one of the, like, small, like, kind of design wisdoms of, like, when camera bumps started to become, like, a lot more popular.
That's a good point. Especially older family members who do not understand, like, their phones and everything. Like, I often video call them and their stuff looks like garbage. They're like, I got a new phone. What's happening here? It's clean.
Just clean it.
Camera lens. Just wipe your
phones. Nowadays will tell you to, like, hey, your lens looks a little bit dirty. You might want to clean it.
You damn pig.
Let's jump back to talking about processor speeds for a second, because Mo Esquire is asking whether or not this is the has a processor with a similar snappiness to
it feels
baseline Pixel.
It feels very similar. It has the same core count. And a lot of times, like on the cheaper versions of phones, they will kind of reduce the core count, even though it's like this technically the same processor. Benchmarks were almost identical across the board. So it definitely feels snappy. You just have less RAM. So that kind of impacts in terms of like your multitasking, or you have a bunch of apps running in the background, or you're, you know, have a like a more intense game that needs, you know, that sucks up a lot about RAM when you're playing it. But in day-to-day use, feels just as snappy as a regular Pixel.
That's probably why there's no Pixel Screenshots app, right? Because you need the RAM to run, like, the models to do the AI work needs RAM.
Google hasn't set it out right, but that's kind of, like, my, you know, thought process. There are some things, and it says, you know, Google still hasn't really confirmed this, but a lot of people are speculating that the version of Gemini that runs on the Pixel 9a is kind of a slightly more streamlined one, just to be able to, like, you know, handle more efficiently with, you know, less RAM on the phone compared to the standard Pixel 9, which has 12 gigs instead of 8.
Gotcha. Mirror's Nook, by the way, is saying they were talking about the size difference between the 8A and the 9A.
Oh, I believe they're the same size, but let me double check that.
If the 9 got bigger than the 8 in general, like the plain phone, then the A phone will tend to like follow suit.
Yeah, okay, so the Pixel 8a has a 6.1-inch screen, but it had slightly bigger bezels, so the size increase is really, really minimal. This is not, unless you have, like, absolutely tiny hands, you probably wouldn't notice all that much. And that's kind of a trend that we've seen in smartphones going back, you know, multiple years, where the listed spec dimension of the screen has been going up, but because the bezels and just like the efficiency and the kind of companies have gotten better at streamlining the displays, the phones actually haven't gotten that bit that much bigger. Just the bezels have shrunk. That said, the Pixel 9a does have tiny, and I do mean very tiny, slightly larger bezels than the regular 9, but you would only notice if you hold them upside to side. So it's not, it doesn't really kind of, it didn't rise to be like a straight up con for me when I was reviewing the 9a.
Gotcha. Any other questions? I think we could just move on. But Pixel 9a, good phone. You give it a high score, Sam. Would you give it 91?
Yeah. This is like one of those clearest, like easiest, like editor's choice, you know, awards that we've given, because just really good value for the price. And like I said before, if you don't need like a big multitasking phone and you're not a heavy gamer or mobile gamer, it just, you know, it hits kind of all the sweet spots of let's cover the core bases. Good screen. Great cameras, good battery life, and, you know, very good software that comes from the Pixel family. It's pretty much got everything you need, and not a ton of extra frills, which is okay.
Awesome.
In fact, I would say that Apple kind of beefed it here. Like
we've been saying this over and over again. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just $100 too much.
Yeah, but like, let's say it again, because too many people leave us reviews saying, why the heck are you so in the tank for Apple? No, like, Apple released its version of like the Xbox Series S and X here. Like, it's a thing that nobody really wants, that doesn't have very good exclusives. It doesn't even have the smarter Siri that they were promising. And it's more expensive for why? Like, maybe the vague possibility of being able to use like generative AI sometime in the future.
Siri eventually. So I don't want to knock that against the 16e at this point. That's part of the reason it's probably so expensive. But you're right.
Are you trying to placate the general artificial intelligence then?
I'm being accurate about what we know and what we don't know. That's all. But I do think, I agree. The 16e, as we've said this over and over, it is $100 too expensive. It doesn't have things we think a phone like this should have, like a higher refresh rate screen. Give us a higher refresh rate, good quality LCD over a 60 hertz OLED. Like, OLED looks better. Objectively, I agree. But it looks better when you're staring at it still and when you're not moving around. And what we do with our phones is scroll and move things and play games. And
a single camera just feels weird.
Yeah.
Even on like a mid-range, entry-level, whatever device.
So I do feel like, I mean, prices in general will not be going down anytime soon for anything, because these companies are all, as we are worried about our wallets and everything, these companies are worried about like what their financials will look like. So the discounts that come out of nowhere will be probably be a thing of the past. And, you know, we'll see what happens to the 16E. But I do wonder if Apple's going to learn a few lessons from this, seeing how good a phone like the Pixel 9a is and all those nothing phones as well. But yeah, we will continue covering all this stuff. I'm sure you're going to have, you know, more coverage from the 9A coming at some point, Sam, because there's AI features. Maybe we'll want to compare to see how like the 9 and AI 9A work in the future with stuff that Google announces. So stay tuned for all of that. Let's move on to some other news, and actually a new section, which we should just dub Tariff Watch. Because just like our AI stupidity section, where we have to dive into things, or what Elon Musk is doing to destroy the American government, now it's tariffs we're worried about. And last week we talked about the fact that the Trump administration announced their global tariffs. Now, because everything is so capricious and you can't really bet on anything, yesterday they were like, no, let's put a pause on that. Let's put a 90-day pause on the tariffs. There will still be 10% tariffs going to all the other countries, but pause on all the tariffs except for China, which is now 125%. And in response, China has reciprocally tariffed U.S. imports going into China as well. It's a fun time. It's a really fun time we're living
on the other hand, I know a bunch of penguins that are really happy that their shiny rocks that they found have a market in the U.S. again.
There, yeah, shout out to the penguins. But what did this mean? Like, basically, after we recorded our episode last week, which I think we were pretty, I was pretty positive on the Switch 2. I understand the price is a big deal and people have complaints. The next day, Nintendo was like, can we delay this? On Friday, April 4th, Nintendo sent out a few statements to news sites. It wasn't a press release. It wasn't a tweet. It wasn't like a wide thing. Here's the exact statement they sent. Pre-orders for Nintendo Switch 2 in the U.S. will not start on April 9th in order to assess the potential impact of tariffs and evolving market conditions. Nintendo will update timing at a later date. The launch date of June 5th, 2025 is unchanged. That's the sort of like weirdness we're going to see for all sorts of products. And Nintendo, it just turned out Nintendo's timing was terrible because they announced this thing right as the tariffs were announced. I'm seeing reports that we don't know if this is fully true, but there are reports going out there that a whole bunch of Nintendo Switch 2s out of Vietnam, which wasn't hit as badly as China, but they were apparently being built there. Nintendo's just like, we're going to ship those suckers out, get those out before any more tariffs are announced. So that's perhaps one thing that's happening. And maybe we won't see a price increase for this, but a lot of these companies are just going to be scrambling to do crazy stuff like this. And not everybody's Nintendo. Not everybody can be like, we need to put 2 million Switch 2s on a ship and it's our ship. Apple can do this. Other big, big companies can do this, but not many. So I do feel like this is going to be a problem for smaller companies.
Someone mentioned it in chat, but I want to bring it up too, because there was a story about how Apple is flying planefuls of iPhones to the U.S. to kind of beat the tariffs, which is just like the most insane thing.
Yeah.
I was going to say, you know who I feel really bad for? I feel bad for the Canadians, because the Canadians got their Switch 2 pre-orders delayed too, and it seems like it's largely the U.S.'s fault. And it's just like,
they all ship to North America and probably go to Canada. That's probably the story there. Yeah, and related to the iPhone thing is that there are reports of people rushing to Apple stores to buy iPhones because what happens with economic uncertainty.
I might be one of them.
Well, yeah, you should have done that. Every week, Ben, we keep saying, oh my God, the sky is going to fall.
Our tiny, tiny mini podcast, will Ben get a new iPhone?
Will Ben
finally
get a new iPhone? The world, yeah, come on, Ben, get that iPhone. But for a lot of people, this is going to be the wake-up call to be like, oh, I got to get this new thing because it's going to get a lot more expensive. Honestly, like, that's one thing I did, like, as my wife and I, we were planning to remodel our kitchen. A very boring thing, but a thing that costs a lot of money and requires a lot of supplies and resources. And as the Trump administration was coming in and there was talk about, like, all the things they would do, it's like, we got to get this done. And probably we'll have saved like $10,000 doing it in January versus like later this year or something. This is true for a lot of devices, true for lots of things.
I was going to say, also, EV sales were up in March because I think people were like kind of rushing to beat the tariffs, and on top of, you know, in case that tax incentive ever goes away, which will, you know, people were largely expecting to happen. And so, people are just like, what do I need right now? And can I get it before the tariffs? And if I can't, then maybe we're just going to wait.
You just wait it out, basically. Speaking of smaller companies, there was a story. Razer has paused direct sales of its laptops in the U.S., so you cannot buy it directly from the Razer website. You can still go to Best Buy or wherever and get those things, but that's a sign. Like, that's a sign that they're not willing to deal with, like, whatever the tariffs that they're going to have to basically price their computers a lot more coming in. They just don't want to deal with that right now. So sales done. Framework has paused some laptop sales. It's raised prices of some laptops by 10%. Framework is a tiny company. Razer is a huge company, at least when it comes to laptops and PC hardware. It's no Nintendo, but it's pretty big. Framework is like a tiny little thing that's just trying to make repairable laptops. And like, it's stuff like that. Those really cool ideas, those really small companies, they're going to be crushed.
And it's sad because I think Framework has offices in Taiwan, which has a separate tariff rate than China proper. And they said they were raising prices by 10% and they were going to eat just some of the costs on the other because they were saying, you know, prices for components were going up by 30%. And so it's just like, even if you are based in other countries, a lot of times the components that you need are coming from China and they're going to have to deal with those increases on pricing too. So it's just really depressing.
Things are pretty bad, folks. And when you hear people talking about like, we're going to bring back manufacturing jobs and build iPhones in the U.S. There are so much reporting about how that is kind of impossible. And
you want a synopsis of why that's impossible?
Many, many
My
reasons.
My brother in Christ, where do you think the manufacturing stuff comes from? We don't there even make our own precision tools anymore.
We don't make
so
that.
So in order to stand up factories, we need to buy those industrial machines from other countries.
And people are like, well, the car company shut down this auto factory in Detroit or something. We could just spin that right back up. But no, those people have other jobs. Those people have moved on. There's all sorts of reasons. Yeah.
I want to give a shout out to Jason Kebler. I don't know how to pronounce his last name. From 404.
Oh, wait, 4044. Yeah.
Yeah. He came out with a really good story the other day, earlier this week, about how the idea of a U.S. made iPhone is pure fantasy. And he does a really good breakdown of like just... It doesn't make sense because even if you could spin up plants in under a year, all the components are coming from so many other places across the world that the idea of everything that you need to make an iPhone could be produced in the US just isn't a reality.
I think there was a spate a few years ago where people were talking about the iPhone as like, oh, wow, like, look at, you know, it's the perfect like avatar of like global supply chain because like all of its little components come from so many different places. And that was just like a moment of appreciation for like how far we've come as a global economy. Now it's more of a liability.
Well, there's that. I mean,
but listen, it's a self-imposed liability.
It's not all rosy too. Like it is, that is part of it, but also there was a lot of reporting early on about like how bad Foxconn was, like the working conditions for the people there and how terrible the conditions were, the factory workers. We would have to replicate some of that here in the U.S. I do think that's never going to happen. It shouldn't happen. And this whole story, too, is a reminder of like the work that goes into building our devices and how hard it is and how other countries don't treat people well to make these things. I was just reading... who is it? Brian Merchant's book, Blood in the Machine. I was listening to the audiobook about that, which was about basically the creation of the iPhone, I believe. And we've forgotten a lot of that. We've forgotten the Foxconn suicides. We've forgotten like how bad the working conditions were and
how
a lot
of
backlash.
That they had to put up nets in order to keep people from jumping out the windows.
Because they were overworking. They were working people really hard to build these things. And on our perspective, what we get is a shiny new iPhone every year. And in China, for a lot of people, it meant like work and turmoil. The flip side of that is like a lot of those people got paid better than they would if they had like a job in their village or something. But still, there's still like so many human costs and things we've not really thought about. So it feels like we're going to have a reckoning for the entire like consumer electronics industry in general, right? Like,
And it's also just like kind of the capitalist mindset, because part of the reason why a lot of those jobs got shipped overseas, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years ago, some economist looked and be like, hey, it costs this much labor in the US to make a phone, whereas labor costs in China are much cheaper. And then even now we've seen companies shift from China to places like Vietnam or India because labor costs are even lower in those countries. And unless you somehow manage to like equalize that across the globe, it's people always be like, hey, we can save a lot of money by shipping labor overseas.
Yep. So I think a lot of people, by the way, the book is, it's The One Device from Brian Merchant. Blood in the Machine is the book he just did about the Luddites, which is also really interesting. I need to check that out. But The One Device, The Secret History of the iPhone, is a well worth a read or audiobook listen or whatever. One thing I think some people have brought up is that some devices just may not exist anymore. Like, you may not be able to buy them anymore. It's sort of like thinking back to, like, you know, we had the Concorde as an airplane, you know, in the 70s. That thing was flying at supersonic speeds between New York and was it New York or Boston? But New York, like East Coast to London. That tech doesn't exist anymore for many, many reasons. And I think back to like the cheap consumer shit that we got over the past decade, the past 15 years. I think the one I keep coming back to is like drones. Maybe we should not have a widespread availability of cheap drones out there, which is, you know, military technology that was quickly translated to be like fun little consumer toys. But for a lot of, like, for some people, yeah, you could take videos all over, you can make action videos or whatever. But for everybody else who doesn't own a drone, it's a loud, annoying thing that tends to disrupt your peace. It's a privacy invader. Like, it's all these things. And I feel like, yeah, maybe we should think a little harder.
You're being pretty prescriptive here. I mean, we're going to get some angry emails from drone fans.
Well, there was rumblings the past year about, hey, are we going to ban DJI because they're a quote-unquote security risk? Chinese company, by far the biggest maker of drones. Almost any
Yeah, I mean, if we don't allow Huawei things to connect to our network, why would we allow DJI?
I'm not even calling for the DJI thing. I'm talking about drones in general. But who is making all the drones now? It's DJI. It's a lot of companies in China. I'm just saying that idea of like, oh, this cool tech that 5 years ago was really expensive, now it's something I could buy for $200 and just like dick around with in my backyard. That era maybe over. Like, we may not be seeing those things for a while, and you may want to hold on to your old tech, guys. Get those things
repaired. So to put a bow on this section, I want to shout out something Declan said in the chat. When spokespeople talk about short-term pain for long-term gain, I'm reminded of that scene from Shrek when Lord Farquaad says, "Some of you may die, but that's a sacrifice I'm willing to make."
Basically. If you could say that and then go off to the golf course saying life will be hard for you, don't worry about it, I'm going to go play golf for the weekend. Seems like there's something wrong with that. So,
speaking of the Trump administration, they kicked the can down the road for the TikTok deal by another 75 days.
This is going to happen every time. This is going to happen every single time.
Yeah, and there's some reporting in Reuters saying that they were actually close to a TikTok deal, but then China was like, hey, wait, you put tariffs on all of our stuff. No, we don't want to do a deal with you.
You tariffed us by 100%. No, thank you.
There is not a week since 2016 or so when I haven't thought about that meme of the guy who puts a stick in his own bicycle spokes and then blames someone else for it. So I think the bike is the TikTok deal, the stick is the tariffs, and then they'll blame Gen Z or something for being so insistent that TikTok stays around.
Constant, like, self-inflicted injuries.
In other news, Samsung's cute Bali robot could be arriving this summer with Google Gemini. I don't think this is going to happen. I think this is talk about like superfluous, like useless tech. I don't think we're going to see Bali. Actually, what do you guys think?
I want it to be real.
I want it to be real too.
Bali come out on stage like 4 or 5 different times over the last 6 or 7 years. And it's a cute little ball. It kind of reminds me of Haro from Gundam, you know, a little happy little robot. I would love to have something like that just rolling around my floor. I don't even have
pets. Yeah, but do you want to pay for it? You want to have it. You don't want to pay for it.
Look, we can get to the cost once they actually make it, because they've been talking about making Bali for so long.
And yeah.
Put it out. I will be so happy. I don't even care how much it costs. I just want to see a product listing with a real buy button that someone out there can actually press. Look, Samsung, I would love to review this thing. Please, talk to us. They have put out an announcement that it's coming and it's going to be available. I just want it to be real.
I would love for Bali to be, but I'm talking, this is what I'm talking about, by the way, like the weird superfluous tech experiments, like this stuff may not, it may be too expensive to release these things, like by the time they actually want to. The thing I want, did you see the cute Star Wars droid, Sam, that was at the end of the NVIDIA GTC thing?
No, I missed that.
It's like one
something
of those two,
similar
like,
to BB-8, perhaps?
Not BB-8. It wasn't rolling like BB-8, but it's like one of those little bots that like walk around the floor and had two legs. It had eyes and like look. It like looked very anime. I was like, you know what? I've had the BB-8 like rolling toy before. It's fine. My cats love it, but you can't really do much with it. But have like a little bot with its own personality that could just like walk around your house, act as a security guard, but also be like a cute little gremlin. Or something.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
I mean, like, yeah. I was walking around Jersey City the other day, and we have little delivery drones.
Yes.
And they wink at you, or, like, they put little heart eye emojis, like, if you, like, you know, kind of move to get out of its way. And it's like, these are, like, the most polite little bots on the street. They just make me happy kind of seeing them around. I would love to have one in my home.
Yeah. I'm gonna pull up a video here. I love this bot. I love this bot, and I love everything about it. The bot was named Blue. And this had been shown before. I believe it's part of like Disney's like. Look at it. Look at the eyes. Look at the legs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's
now
so
it
cute.
Looks like another one of the kind of Star Wars bots that you see like walking around in the background, yeah. But it never really has a name.
Like little here is it next to Jensen. That thing is moving. It has like it moves like a cat. It moves like an animal. It seems like it has a personality.
It just looks happy.
It looks happy. And this part of this was that it was potentially trained using some of NVIDIA's tools. So like the AI learning tools and where it learns the environment and does training and stuff. But like, give me a cute little happy bot. Again, a superfluous thing that may not exist for a long time, but maybe this could do things. Maybe this could be a security bot. Maybe this could be like, hey, your pet made a mess on the floor or send you a phone alert or something. But yeah, give us cute bots. We want cute bots, be it Bali or this thing. I love Blue. Anyway.
So we do have some listener mail that I want to shout out. And we're going to try to start including YouTube comments on our live streams as listener mail. And we want to shout this one out because it's way less stinky than all of our usual YouTube comments. Okay. Leave us some nice YouTube comments in addition to sending us some good emails at podcast@engadget.com. So user Hippo Cheese says on YouTube that it's ironic. This is in relation to the Switch 2. And they say that it's ironic that you guys started off in the podcast acknowledging that, man, 1080p doesn't go as far as it used to. This is in relation to, I think I was talking about the quality of my own camera, because I have a 1080p camera. I'm pretty sure Sam has a 1080p camera. And then a little later in the show, it seems like we're falling for the numbers game here, similar to thinking that more pixels equals better quality. Just because the Switch 2 can do 1080p at 120 hertz and 4K at 60 FPS doesn't mean anything. They say, I can do 4K 240 hertz on all AAA games on my RTX 2080 if I set all graphics settings to potato minimum.
I mean, that's a good point. I don't think we were, the main thing I was saying about the Switch 2 is like, we have to see this. We have to see this in action and see it reach what Nintendo see and see what those things actually look like. But that is a good point. You could say whatever you want with numbers. You could run Pong. You know, you could run some like really low res games at 1080, 240 or 1080, 120 or 4K 60. And like, you know, technically you made that happen. I feel like that's something Sony did with the PlayStation 4 a bit. Like they had announced some specs for some games or something. Certainly the PlayStation 5, not many things actually hit 120 hertz. Yeah, it's not necessarily going to look better. There has been some good discussion around what is actually powering the Switch 2. Nintendo is not developing full specs. NVIDIA has said some things that, hey, we have. NVIDIA has admitted like there's DLSS, there's AI upscaling in the Switch 2, like in the chip they're using. We don't actually know like comparatively how powerful it is. The folks at Digital Foundry have done like some of their research and they're like, maybe it's about as powerful as a PlayStation 4, maybe a little better to do some like with AI upscaling. You could be a little better. There's a lot we still need to see with the Switch 2. So yeah, I'm saying those numbers because Nintendo put a 120 hertz screen on that device. So that's the other thing. So Nintendo is not a company that makes a huge expense in its hardware. They tend not to put things in if it's going to cost too much. So I feel like they may see some benefit from that. Also, 1080p to 120 hertz is not a hard get. It's actually, you can do that pretty easily, especially with games using Nintendo's art style and everything. It's the 4K 60 where I'm like, I don't know if you can really do that. I don't quite believe them there.
That's probably going to be docked only.
Yeah, no, it's definitely docked only. We talked about that. You have to get the dock, and the dock has a fan, and they're going to crank it up. Yeah.
I have to say, like, this is kind of conflating a bunch of different things. I think, you know, the general sentiment is, like, you know, it's kind of interesting. But, you know, you talk about, like, more megapixels equals better quality. And that was kind of like became a red herring to a certain extent. But, like, you know, for example, the Pixel 9a that I just reviewed had a 48 megapixel main camera. Except when you actually take photos on it, the photos are 3000 by 4000. Now, if you do the math on that, that's actually only 12 megapixels because, you know, it's not just you can't just look simply at the numbers because there's, you know, they're doing pixel binning. They're kind of combining some of these. And this has several effects on, hey, if you combine the kind of pixels, you get more light sensitivity, which is really good for low light photos. And so it's not, we've gotten to kind of to the point where you can't just straight up look at the numbers. You have to do a little bit more kind of deeper digging into what do these numbers actually mean and how much value are you really getting out of it. And this kind of goes back to this saying is like, you know, there's no reason to upgrade from like a 120 hertz monitor or display to 144 hertz because that gap is so small, you're not really going to notice anything. That said, 720p to 1080p is a difference that almost everybody can discern. And kind of the same thing where you jump from 60 FPS to 120 FPS is once again a difference that a lot of people can actually just, oh, I can see this right away. And so, you know, I can do 4K 240 hertz on all AAA games. Yeah, if you turn down the graphics and if you're playing competitive games, there actually is a reason for that because it kind of reduces latency and stuff like that.
And also, so, if you have the monitor that even supports that resolution, only like the newest monitors have done that. So that's another thing. Like if you have an RTX 2080 system, I don't think you have a 4K 240 hertz monitor that you're attached that to. The Switch, what we do know is it has a 1080 120 hertz screen. So that is
with HDR. And I can tell you just from the previews, the difference from the original Switch screen or even the Switch OLED screen to the Switch 2 is night and day. It is such an obvious improvement. It might not come across in photos, but if you hold this thing in your hands, you can eliminate all the stuff about specs and frame rate and resolution and all that. If you just look at the screens, it looks so much better and it's very obvious. And so it kind of, one of those things is like doesn't translate in terms of numbers, but in person, you definitely notice a difference.
Again, like I don't think Nintendo, if they didn't see the market difference with the 120 hertz like modes and stuff, I don't think they would have done it at all. Because this is a company that essentially reused the GameCube's hardware after the GameCube failed and was like, we're gonna put it in a white box and we got motion controllers now. How about that? Does that
you
work?
Know what?
It was a phenomenon. It was a phenomenon. So it's sort of like Nintendo is not the sort of company to be like, we've got the fastest processor in the world. That's what Microsoft did. Microsoft was like, we made the fastest console you've ever seen. Nobody cared because Sony had all the exclusives and Nintendo had like the smaller like portable console like as its own like little gimmick. So there's a lot we still need to see. But I'm still like pretty excited about the Switch 2. I am worried about price changes. We'll see.
That's it.
We'll see
what's happening. I still think it's a very valuable comment because it's like kind of It's something good to think about in terms of, you know, you looking at a spec sheet, you're looking at numbers, and you're trying to figure out how does this translate into real world performance. And I think that's always a very important question to ask.
I do think, Sam, maybe you're overselling the general user a little bit because I don't think people will see the difference between 720p and 1080p. Like that, it's that sort of thing. Like it was the difference from 480p, right? From SD, from DVDs to any sort of HD. That was the massive leap. But I keep seeing like people I know, people techies who have like certain things set up, like you're playing that at 720p or you're watching this YouTube video. Can you flip that to 1080p? And most people do not care or they don't see the functional difference in their monitors. It's that sort of, but it's the leap from 480p.
I'm definitely talking to our audience who I appreciate that, you know, they're a little bit more tech savvy, but I think the other thing is like when you're looking at YouTube, I've noticed people do the same thing all the time. I think it's just because they just let the defaults, you know, dictate kind of the content that they watch.
YouTube Whereas wants if, to give you 720p because that's less money for YouTube to pay for bandwidth.
So, I've done the same thing that you just, and it's like, you flip the switch from 720p to 1080p and people go, oh, that does look better. Now, sometimes you're right. Some people don't see it. I'm, you know, not going to argue that. But I think a lot of times a little education goes a long way. And people's like, oh, man, like I'm going to start doing this all the time.
Mm-hmm. I also don't know if people will actually see the difference between 60 hertz and 120 hertz. But the thing is, the Switch, the frame rate you typically saw was 30 FPS. That's what you were typically seeing. So to have a device that can even like give you 60 FPS standard on most things, like that is a huge improvement. That's like a night and day difference. And then a 120 FPS is just butter. Like that's just like, oh, your Mario Kart looks even smoother now as you're moving faster. So those are the things I'm excited about because like, hey, even Apple is not budging beyond 60 hertz or 60 FPS on the iPhone, on the base iPhone. And it's wild to see Nintendo, the company that reused the GameCube's hardware for another like almost 10 years to basically plug that in there.
Yeah, people forget the Tegra processor that was in the original Switch was already 2 or 3 years old when the Switch launch happened. And so it's like, you know, Nintendo has defied a lot of expectations in terms of getting more out of the hardware that's in their system than pretty much any other device maker. So, you know, I tend to give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt, but even from that, my hands, like, you know, what I've seen at the previews and stuff, the hardware is definitely a jump, without a doubt, a jump up in, you know, generation over generation.
Most definitely. So I cannot wait to see that. Let's move on to what we've been working on. Sam, or actually a rounding gadget. Nathan Ingram reviewed The Last of Us Season 2, which is coming soon to Mac. So I'm looking forward to seeing that and seeing what the dialogue around that is, because
Very
Ben,
excited,
have you
yeah.
played The Last of Us 2?
I know the story, and I know okay. that people
Things
should
happen.
Look out.
Things happen. Yeah. Sam, like, yeah, are you excited for this season?
Yeah, this is like, I let my HBO subscription kind of lapse like 6 or 7 months ago, but between this and White Lotus, I feel like it's time to, you know, restart that subscription. Now's a really good time.
Maybe not
White really
Lotus.
Good shows to check out.
White Lotus is not the one to do for the there's so many other good shows right now on Max. Common Side Effects I've talked about. The other, what was it? The WB show, the DC show, the cartoon version to Creature Commandos. That's a lot of fun. So yeah, you've got a lot of reasons to check it out. Last of Us Season 2 coming soon. Nate really liked it, but you know, real talk, Nate loves everything Last of Us. Nate, I feel like Nate has played The Last of Us Part 1 at least 3 or 4 times all the way through because they keep re-releasing it and we've like done like multiple reviews of that thing. Amazing stuff. I can't wait to see what they do with that. Let's move on to what we're working on. Hey, I'm testing that LG 240 Hertz monitor. No, the 480 Hertz monitor. I need to see
Ooh,
like
nice.
How that actually
Yeah, they just released performed. Pricing for those, I believe, recently.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Sam, what are you up to?
So I'm working on the Rivian R1S review that I got Generation 2 that I got to test out a little while back. And this is kind of probably a good timing because the New York Auto Show is next week, too. So I'll be attending that. Not so sure how much we're going to get in terms of just like, you know, global debuts, but it's always nice because cars are big and hard to move around to be able to go to one place and see a bunch of like, you know, the modern offerings from a bunch of different automakers all in the same place.
That's cool. I hope the Volvo will probably have their electric sedan, the one that they had just announced. So that would be cool to see. I've said, before,
I believe Lucid is going to have the Gravity there.
Nice.
So that's definitely one I'm looking forward to checking out.
Have you seen the R3 yet? I feel like the Rivian
not
R3
in person.
Is the one
You know, I think everyone can agree that car looks awesome, and they've been kind of doing like a tour around the country where they'll bring it to like certain Rivian dealerships or showrooms. But I haven't seen it in person yet. I would love, hopefully, that will be there, but I'm not sure.
I kind of I spent a lot of time like researching family cars and stuff too. But now it's gotten to the point where my kids are often having activities and different things, and my wife is doing different things. And sometimes I have a screening to go to. I'm like, can I justify a cutie patootie little EV just as a second car? And it's kind of like, oh, that would be nice with the Rivian. Probably be the Hyundai Ioniq, except prices. Everything is going to explode, folks. It's going to be a bad time. Let's move on to our pop culture picks for the week. I just want to shout out, I just reviewed Black Mirror Season 7, and my review is basically all bangers. It's all bangers. It's all very, very good. Weirdly, it feels kind of cathartic and therapeutic to watch Black Mirror now because the world is so bad. Like, just looking at the news.
Dev, I think that's just you. You've said so often that you love to externalize your emotions by watching stressful things on TV.
I've said that.
That is not everybody.
Is everybody else not stressed by the news right now? You know what's not?
I'm just saying not everybody likes to externalize it.
But what's not as stressful?
I appreciate it too, because a lot of times the stuff in Black Mirror is clearly worse than what's going on in the world.
It is
so
worse.
It's like it's almost like, yeah, you know, the current times are kind of screwed up, but at least we're not Black Mirror.
That's basically it. Things are bad, but at least there's not killer AI trying to take over the world or a company that's renting out access to your brain, which are things that happen in Black Mirror season 7. So I think it's a pretty strong season. Great actors, great writing, some sequels. There's a bit of a sequel episode to Bandersnatch that is a lot of fun, I think. And they even released a companion game to that. And there's an episode with Paul Giamatti called Eulogy, which is incredible. I think one of the best things ever to come out of Black Mirror, but also one of the best performances from Paul Giamatti. If you've seen him in Sideways, was it The Leftovers, the movie that came out a couple years ago too? He is a tremendous actor, but he's also, I think, one of the greatest actors when it comes to like showing longing and regret, and you know, somebody who regrets much of their life, and that is fully on display there too. Anything you want to shout out, Sam?
Yeah, I want to shout out Moonrise. I have not seen any advanced episodes or anything like that, but it's a new anime that comes out, I believe, this Friday on Netflix, or maybe today, actually.
Okay.
And so the pedigree is really good. Being done by Wit Studio, which is the same studio that does Attack on Titan and some other stuff that you might hear about. The character designer is the author from Full Metal Alchemist, and it's an anime original story, so there's no manga that you need to read beforehand or and so I just go check out the trailer if you can. I think it looks incredible.
I'm playing the trailer now. It looks fun.
And the kind of premise of the story is that it's kind of Earth versus Moon, and there's two civilizations, and kind of a Gundam-y little vibes. And so, hey, look, anything with you can tell me that there's a moon base in the show or the movie, I'm probably into. So I'm definitely going to give this a watch later this week.
Feels like there's a bit of Expanse in here, too. Whenever I see a trailer for Humanity,
there's a good call out. Yeah.
I'm looking at your characters. Is that CG or is it hand drawn? That's the thing. Because I'm tired. I'm tired of the CG models as characters. You got no detail. You got no life in you. And this one looks like they are hand-drawn character models, CG backgrounds.
The art looks gorgeous from what I can tell.
Looks amazing. When I was talking to Mr. Shinichiro Watanabe around the whole Lazarus thing last week, he specifically said, I will only ever do characters hand-drawn. Because doing CG, it just feels like it's a little lifeless, it's a little mechanical. But he will do CG for backgrounds and vehicles, and that makes sense, because you can get that sort of vibe there. So anyway, this looks cool, Sam. Can't wait to check it out. Also, can't wait to see more on Lazarus, too. That would be a fun time. I think that's it for this episode. I will wrap. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Ellman. You can find me online at @DaVindra on, Blue Sky, all over the place. I podcast about movies and TV at The Filmcast, thefilmcast.com. Sam, where can we find you?
You can find me at Sam Rutherford on Twitter. But I was talking to, DaVindra and Ben earlier. I'm trying to move over to Blue Sky. Someone,
do it.
If you have questions, just tweet at,
everybody post, follow at Sam me. So he has reason to
He's
go
at
to,
Sam Rutherford.
At Sam Rutherford, Blue Sky Social. Yeah, so hit me up with some questions. Give me a good reason to move over on top of all the others that, already exist.
The good reason is that it's where all the cool kids are, Sam. It's where the conversations are happening.
Yeah,
and also, being people, it's like old Twitter where people would actually respond with good natured responses to things.
Hit me up on Blue Sky. Give me more reasons to go use that platform.
Go ahead and email us at podcastandgadget.com. We would love more questions. Leave us a review on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts. Thanks, folks. We're out.